Would you please stand for the invocation and remain standing for the pledges?
Good to see you all this morning.
Morning.
Let's pray. Gracious and Heavenly Father, we come to you today grateful for the opportunity to serve this community. We ask for your presence this morning in this meeting and grant wisdom to our council members, clarity to their discussions, and integrity to every decision that is made. May their work be guided by wisdom and a sincere desire to promote the well-being of all who live and work in this city. Help us listen with open minds, speak with respect, and act with courage. Help us seek solutions that bring peace and prosperity to our community. We give thanks for this city, for its people, for the shared responsibility of caring for one another. May our time together be productive and guided by your wisdom. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible.
Missed that last time. Thank you, Pastor, for that meaningful prayer. Oh, he's left. Okay. Well, I see we have the CVB in the gallery today and a few visitors. Nice to have you here for the first meeting of 2026. Council comments.
Good morning. Happy New Year, everybody. Hope everybody had a great holiday. A big shout out to Jennifer Krupa and her entire team that put on an amazing New Year's Eve event at Market Plots.
Yeah, I was through there earlier, and it was amazing, the crowd that was on the square. So it's a great event. Thank everybody for that. I did attend a commissioner's court meeting. It went to executive session pretty quickly, so there were some minor details, but they did bring up that Judge Patello had upheld their judgment against the battery operation in Harper, and I'm not sure if the one in Willow City area was included, but that was a positive move. Now I'm hearing more things throughout the state about this. I'm not sure what's all going to happen. I do know that our state legislator people are apparently in favor of this because of the grid deal, but they're not thinking about the. Although I've been told that some of the legislation people are now thinking that maybe the Hill Country is not the best place for this. But anyway, stay tuned for that.
Good morning and Happy New Year. I echo the kudos to Jennifer and the electric department and every department who worked to make New Year's Eve a blast. It's getting better and better every year, I think. On the 17th, I attended a meeting out at Boot Ranch with some residents and some folks from Cornyn, Cruz, Roy, Flores, and Troxclair's offices. They are in the know now, and yes, I think to echo what Tony said, they've heard it from higher ups at the state that the Hill Country might not be the best place for these battery and solar facilities. I was down in Gonzales County this weekend, and there are a lot of solar spots down there. It's interesting how it's creeping up, but I think there are some places in our state where it makes sense to have them, and I don't think the Hill Country is one of them. So continuing to advocate for them to move elsewhere, we'll see where that goes. Looking forward to a good year.
Was there any pledge of advocacy on our behalf? Or did they just say, we hear you? We'll
no pledges.
No commitments.
No commitment at this time.
Mr. Watson's absent today. I'm assuming it's excused. But we do have a quorum. All right. Let's go to the consent agenda. One item is several minutes to approve the regular meetings in December and the special joint meeting we have with the CBP board.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion and second to approve. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. All right, let's go to 6A, Fredericksburg CBP quarterly update. Mr. Shields, or Dr. Shields, nice to have you here. Are you the one going to speak?
I will be one.
Okay, come on. Thank you for coming today.
Good morning, honorable councilpersons. How are you? And I'm David. Thank you all very, very much. Can you all hear me all right?
I can.
Okay, good. Thank you. And all of y'all? Thank you. Okay. Before I speak, I would like to read the Fredericksburg Convention and Visitor Bureau mission statement. Now, often when a board or an organization gets together, they remind each other of what their core competency is, what it is that drives them together. You did this morning, I think, from a philosophical point of view, with your invocation, your prayer, reminding yourselves of the flags, what they mean to you. And I think there's something to be said about our mission. And even in communications, I don't even know if you know where our mission statement is. So we made sure that was in your deck, that when you have an opportunity to read that, you can see it. So if you will, please. The mission of the Fredericksburg Convention and Visitor Bureau is to preserve, protect, and promote Fredericksburg Gillespie County destination offerings to enhance vitality and quality of place. The mission is accomplished by passionate people working to create a market and overnight destination where visitors can experience the richness of our culture, natural and culinary offerings, as well as the diversity and quality of our retail, entertainment, and accommodations mix. And I think one of the important things that I think we can stress today that's so apropos for this meeting is passionate people working in partnership. And that's what this room is full of right now. And all the people in our community are so invested in what we do today to make sure that we are promoting the very best of Fredericksburg. So thank you all very, very much for that. This morning, we want to follow up with our very positive and constructive meeting that we had on Tuesday, December 9th, by providing a presentation focused on our request for two major needs. Adoption of a three-year annual budget for the CVB, and the return of $1 million to the operating budget, providing the CVB with $5.3 million for the fiscal year. This presentation is supported by a very full deck for your perusal at a later date. For now, we want to provide clarifying data for the source of our budget needs and demonstrating the effectiveness of how the CVB has been at effectively using allocated funds for marketing, sales, and the operating running of the CVB. To do so, we will refer to the PowerPoint deck supported by our staff, vice presidents, and two members of our board that are here today. Before I introduce our team, I want to thank you again for this opportunity to present to you and the chance to forge a closer relationship to as true partners serving the best interests of Gillespie County and the city of Fredericksburg. Also, I think right before I do that, because I just made a note in my remarks, we have an update from the end of day yesterday on our search, from SearchWide on our new CEO and president, and I thought I'd give you a little update on that. We have candidates going through that initial screening. We have our first major update that will come to us on the search hiring committee January 23rd. And then we are remaining on schedule for our candidate review February 4th. Then what happens is that we have online virtual interviews February 18th and 19th. And then we remain on schedule, I think it's March 4th, for an all-day interview. So that's the process. And if we're very fortunate, we've got the right candidates to serve that role, then we're ready to go in April, and we'll all be really excited about that. So that's the update there. But let me, I know we all here in this room probably know the key players, but for those in the virtual world, I do want to remind everyone who is supporting the city in this role at the CVB. My name is David Shields. I'm from the Texas Historical Commission, and I serve as the site manager at the National Museum of the Pacific War. Behind me, you guys might just want to raise your hand in a little clever way. I'm going to first introduce my two board colleagues, Jesse Barter from Hill and Vine, and Matthew Pipkin from the Albert Hotel. And then our vice presidents, Jenny Stout, HR, Administration, and Finance, Amanda Kuhn, Marketing and Public Relations, and Karen Mayo, Vice President, Sales and Strategic Alliance. They did a lot of work producing this document for you for your review. And so we're here to answer your questions. But also before we do that, I think I'm going to ask Jesse or Matthew, Jesse, I think, to come forward to provide some introductory comments to lead you through some of the things that we think are most pertinent. But then we are all here available to look through this at any level of detail that you like to answer your questions. Certainly come back at a later date.
And KK is here.
And, oh, I'm sorry. Yes. KK is always here to support us. I should have said that. I'm so part.
Yeah. Okay.
Rockbox and everybody, everything else. So thank you all very, very much.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, all. Thank you so much. Happy New Year's to all of you. You have a massive deck. I do not intend to go through all of those slides, but I would like to highlight one very important slide. As we talked about over the last quarter update, our last quarter at the CVB has been about connecting with our city. You have actively seen our staff actively involved at your meetings, county commissioners, in every opportunity we are getting involved. We took the opportunity to listen to our team, listen to our community, and listen to our city leaders and follow them with what they needed. They also listened to us with what we needed as well. The biggest thing that we need is commitment to funding so that we can put programs into place, and we really need the money back that we were allocated in the past. The biggest key to that is this stat right here. In 2024, Gillespie County had a total direct travel spending of $190 million. In 24, the FC or the CVB provided an annual return of $57 in direct visitor spend for every dollar that was spent on marketing. So when we look at that $1 million loss, we're actually looking at a $57 million loss to our economy and the local businesses that are up and down Main Street. This is why this funding is massively important to us, so that we can continue the efforts that we know work. We know that they work just in this fourth quarter alone. I look forward to seeing the economic impact of the fourth quarter. The CVB put out a marketing campaign in the fourth quarter because over the summer, businesses were hurting. Main Street was hurting. Visitation was down. We realized that. We all felt the last fourth quarter has been an amazing endeavor. I know my restaurant stayed packed throughout the Christmas season. I spoke to many downtown businesses that saw a massive increase in visitation over the fourth quarter. I think this is all direct to the direct spin that comes from the CVB and what we do. Our commitment is to continue the long-standing approach of Fredericksburg of welcoming visitors. We've done this for a very long time in our community. Visitors have been coming for a long time. The economic powerhouse of our economy in this town is visitation. We know that. We also know that it must be maintained and done in a correct way. And that's what our team is focused on. And it's really important to us for long-term commitment and working together. And the key to this is working together as a community. And that's our commitment at the CVB. And right now, we're currently looking for somebody new to run our department. And the biggest key that it is going to be for them is to work with all of you and all of us to make sure that this city works together. So I appreciate y'all's time in detail and meeting with us and the time you've given us. Thank you.
I'm just here as emotional support for Jesse. No, I'll echo what he said. I really am grateful to all of you for the time you spent with us at the end of last year, and very encouraged about where we are and looking forward to working together to make Fredericksburg the best that it can be. And I will echo Jesse's sentiment that the fourth quarter was a huge change in direction from how the summer went for our businesses on Main Street. And I think a lot of it was attributable to
that. Could I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
I want to make sure I heard correctly. With regard to this $1 million that the council voted to keep rather than give to the CVB, there were a lot of discussions about what, why, and how that should go and so forth. And what I think I remember is that this was money that was being put into a reserve account for future use, future projects, and so forth, but it was continuing to build at a rate that seemed like it was sufficient. The council never had any intention of withholding money that would be necessary to do what you've been doing and to see if the fourth quarter's bumps and that sort of thing. I think I'm hearing you say now you'd like to see that money returned to the CVB for new initiatives. Is that what I'm hearing? No? Karen, you can speak to that. I saw your head go crazy. Go ahead and come on up, please, so we can get you on record. I'm just trying to get clarity about why the request is made. The council wanted, I wanted us to see about using that for specific historic preservation and arts funding and arts that, I mean, in hot money that might not be within y'all's specific purview. And so that was the intent. So tell me what the issue is now about the return of that money.
So I think the confusion, there was a moment where it was being, for say, earmarked, kind of moved 500,000 over the three when he was there, and he was moving it towards the project of an additional building.
A new building, yeah.
When that time period changed, Brady paid the last 500 that had been committed by Ernie into reserve, but from that point on, we spent dollar for dollar on marketing. It was $5.3 million that went to marketing. If there was money that went into the reserve, it was as a, we had people that went on maternity leave, so we weren't paying certain salaries. Or maybe that there was initiative, Brand USA wasn't doing a candidate event anymore, so that there was money left at the end of the table that we had moved over. It is not $1 million over. This isn't an additional spend. What happened when the money was cut was we had to pull back on the initiative that we were doing.
Okay.
We just want to go back to what we were doing.
So it was a parking place for some funding that was already designated. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
So and I can speak to 24. So we had every member of our marketing team out on maternity leave for 3 months. So it's really difficult. Obviously, we have savings and salaries, retirement, all of that fun stuff. But also, when your entire marketing team is out, it's hard to follow through with initiatives when you have no one on staff that can do it. They were really great about doing a lot of stuff from home when they were out on maternity leave, but still we were not able to execute everything that we had planned to do because I cannot do stuff like that. Karen, she's not capable of doing the marketing initiative. And so we did have some savings there. But since then, you'll see in our financials from last year, we did not have near that go to reserve.
Is that building project still in your on your books, or is that's not an issue anymore?
No, this is a conversation for another time. We are looking into using that $500,000 to remodel the public restrooms. We are currently having plumbers in there weekly. Just this fiscal year so far, we've spent about $2,500 just in maintenance and repairs for a plumber. That's just hiring. So that's a huge need that we are going to discuss reallocating to the public restrooms.
Including what was in reserve.
So, what is the reserve right now?
I'm going to say 4.5.
Okay. Let me ask you: are you looking for the $1 million back, or just a $500,000?
They needed a little extra lift on that. So for us, we were able to spend $1,000 on that. So we were only able to be part of that conversation. We were in the right room at the right time. There's also for like LA, I mean, 140, we're talking about 10 million. There's the $5 million threshold for getting.
Okay.
Just a quick request. Can y'all speak into the mic? It's not being picked up online.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I think the thing that's glaringly obvious for me is, so last year we funded y'all at 4.3. The county only did 1 million. where are your discussions for getting more money from them? Because that seems like an untapped resource, if you will.
Totally agree, and I've had some positive conversations with Judge Jones. They are exploring ways that they can beef up their enforcement collection of their hot taxes. I don't know, that was in November that I spoke to them. I don't know where they are since then, but we are trying to push them and put some pressure on them. They recognize that there's a lot going on in the county that they're not enforcing and collecting, so we would love to see them do more.
And on that regard, I think obviously our goal, we've met with all of the city council members, we're trying actively to do that same thing with council, with county. It's a little different sometimes with county, trying to meet with those individuals, but the same commitment we're trying to do with those. And going back to the reserve question, I think that the reserves are way too high, but at the end of the day, with the full organization and all these staff members on our team coming in every year without knowing what money is going to be allocated, it's very difficult for us not to carry a reserve fund with no guarantees of money coming in every year. If we were able to get this three-year commitment, we could work that down. In that packet, we do have SKT working on an architectural design to redo those bathrooms, and those monies would come from that reserve fund. And so there's ways that that reserve fund needs to come down, but there's just no way that we can consciously do that if we don't know that next year we're going to have any funding. And I think that's one of the biggest commitments we are looking for from council, is to say, we're going to commit to y'all over a three-year program, and then we can start working down those reserves because we have that commitment. Right now, we don't know what we're going to get funded from one year to the next. And so to have a staff and put initiative in, it's important for us to carry a reserve. But with the commitment from council today, we can start to buy down those reserves as well.
Forgive me if I read over this, but the question was asked in December, if y'all can pull from your reserves into your budget so that you could hit the $5 million. I haven't heard an answer on that.
Yeah, the question is whether or not you'll give us funding, we can start to work through that.
Well, can you pull from your reserves so you can hit $5 million this year? Is what I'm asking.
I think that the answer that you had last time was that it was the funding for the fiscal year, exclusive of reserves.
Okay, because in what y'all sent over, was that December 30th? It said something about your operating budget. So can't you pull reserves into an operating budget? Right?
That's an option to discuss. I don't know that will meet what Karen was discussing, the opportunity to say that we're being funded year over year at an X amount, which allows us to go from that 3A to 4A to 5A statement. So though that money will allocate us to be able to do some marketing initiatives, it still won't allow us, when we go into the marketing meetings and we go to the big to sit at the tables and be able to invite people in. They look at direct funding year over year, and not with what we can pull from reserves.
It leans more regional, that we would be more in line with other beautiful cities, small, Wimberley, Llano, more in our regional area. The positioning that we've gotten ourselves in really leans ourselves really having a voice in the courts in the state, but then also recognized nationally, which helps us when we're selling to corporate event planners, which helps us when we're trying to bring in new business, which helps us when we're trying to elevate the traveler coming through. Can we still, we love this city, we will do an incredible job with what y'all give us. It's a better hand play.
Okay, just to be clear, because this is what y'all sent over, the regional tier, those are, it's not towns like Wimberley, it's like Waco, New Braunfels, College Station, San Marcos.
Absolutely.
The statewide one that you want to be in is Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas.
That's
right?
The one we're sitting in right now, and that's how we co-brand with Austin. And so we're able to attend events like IPW, which is the United States' largest travel trade show that they pay. We're allowed to attend that event only because Austin pays about $40,000 for it, and we pay $10,000. Because we co-brand with them. But we co-brand with them because we're at that same level. We work hard for that. So we have much smaller resources than them, but we're working hard so that we can stand at the table at the same time.
And y'all done a great job of
getting
relationships in place. It seems a little off to me that you have to pay to play, and it's not based on your relationship with the city of Austin.
I don't feel like it's a pay to play, and I don't want it to come across that way, but there is an option in when when you play, there is an optics in what level. I mean, your membership dues they just kind of fall in buckets, and everybody kind of knows where you are. And right now, everybody, we're in a solid with the $1 million less. It's fine. It's just more.
So, have you been allowed less caliber of CEO candidates? Y'all hinted at that last time.
We were.
Yes. So when the board redid the job description, that was one of the things that took us a little bit, because we wanted to revamp it. But yes, initially, with the salary in our budget, there were people that were very interested, and when they saw our budget, they were like, never mind, because we've had a $5 million budget, and what they can do with that budget determines if they want to come here, even though they love Richardsburg, and they were very interested. It just, because they know, as Karen said, we have a seat at a different table when we're at that threshold. But also to your pulling over reserves, we can absolutely do that to get to the $5 million for a year. But when they're looking at it, they're the organizations, they're truly looking at the funding that we receive yearly. Because we can only pull from reserve for however long we have that reserve. So that's what they look at it for. Thank y'all.
You've committed funds from reserve for Hill Country Preserve, correct? How much is that?
$250,000. And then we also did our fall campaign that we did was also $250,000 that came out of reserve. Yeah. And we, I think you were in that meeting when we had a presentation from the United States Historical and Heritage Organization. Don't quote me on that name. And then we kind of, with the resignation of Brady, we kind of put that on the back burner at the moment. But that was going to be, I want to say, 175 to 250 range if we were going to move forward with that initiative.
I have a general question, and anybody can answer this, including David, if you'd like to step up. So I'm hearing a theme is an upper tier of position that opens up some doors of opportunity, et cetera. Getting back $1 million in reserves are tagged for special initiatives, specific initiatives, as well as getting back to where you were. We're in a transition period of a new director, and we have a better shot at getting a better director if we're in a certain period, et cetera. All of the theme is we've got some gaps to fill with our business, trying to get people to come to town. Where are those gaps? What are your initiatives? If I'm just a person in town and I'm stopped at the intersection of Llano and Main, I'm saying, we've got plenty of people here. And if I'm stopped in traffic, et cetera, what are the gaps? What are you looking to do? What's missing? What would you? I could see if we were Bandera or some other city that we're trying to build up resources and get more people to come for tourism. But heritage travelers, et cetera, what are you looking for? What's missing?
Absolutely. You can, in this very robust deck, and we've also got a breakdown by theme. I know, Emily, I hope you've seen it already, but it's pretty fabulous. History, heritage, arts, and culture are absolutely dynamic and important to all that we do as far as paid media, earned media, really all of our efforts. But what you'll see going into 26 for us is additional focus on that and emphasis. We're rolling out an additional always-on marketing campaign, which is paid media, and in the deck it goes into all of those lovely details and specific demographics of how we're going to promote that and how we're being very cost-efficient and making sure that we have high-value visitors that are not only coming here, but they're coming here and they are spending money at a variety of destination points of interest that align with our core values. So you can go into the very nitty-gritty details there in the deck. It is quite a big deck, and we're happy to go into detail on our complete marketing plan at another time. I know I wanted to be very respectful of our time here today.
This is the slide deck you presented?
Yes. Okay.
So you're telling me that the answer to my question is in here?
It is, and we can go into more detail if you'd like. I just wanted to be incredibly respectful. I know we had about 20 minutes.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the core foundation of this is if you talk to downtown business people this last summer, they wouldn't tell you that we had too much tourism. when I saw multiple restaurants closing one after another, shops closing down on Main Street, that wasn't because they had too much tourism. It was because they didn't have the people spending the money. The visitation you've seen has been the increase from the marketing dollars that we pulled from reserves to push that initiative, because we talked to those downtown business owners this summer, and they were telling us about how they were about to close their shops. And so the gaps that you're talking about, yes, there's people walking up and down our street, but spending is down. You look at total tourism across the U.S., we've got to find that right visitor so that they can spend the money on the small shop. The Fredericksburg CVB is the marketing agent of small businesses. Yes, they help the larger ones, but the truth of it is the small businesses up and down our Main Street do not have marketing dollars. They do not have the budget. They do not have the resources or the knowledge to do that. That's the job of this team right here, is to help tell the story of the small businesses and help tell the story of these cultural places that they can come and visit. As you'll see, Emily, in that breakdown, over 90% of the ads run over the last 30 days have touched heritage, have touched arts, all of the initiatives that you wanted to see and many of the council wanted to see. We break those ads out so you can see we're not just promoting the wineries. We're not just promoting the restaurants. In fact, the vast majority of our marketing is cultural heritage and arts. Do we include about a restaurant? Absolutely. But the bread and butter of what we want to market is these great, amazing things that we have here. And we can prove that in our marketing deck, that that's where our money is being spent. And that's what we're doing it on.
So my question wasn't aimed at any sort of deficiency. It's aimed at what is it that you want to do next. So, Jesse, am I hearing you correctly that the fourth quarter particularly, the visitation was up in terms of bodies, but that they're still not opening their wallets like they used to? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, no, I mean, we still see a trend in that, I think, across the board. But if you travel and tourism and spend across the U.S., you're seeing that pocketbooks are tightening in that situation. So even though if we're seeing visitation, that doesn't always show that transition to direct spend. And so when we talk about the initiatives for next year and what we need this for, number one is to get the right leader in our program, and that's what we're actively doing. And so, you know, all hands on deck right now to get the best leader we possibly can to run this organization. The second thing is to take the feedback from the meetings that we had from council members, from y'all, and start to look at other initiatives that we can use these reserve funds, whether it's a Cultural Heritage Association or some of these other programs, we believe can have impact. But most importantly, we've got to get a leader in our office that can lead our team, and that's our full commitment right now, is finding the right person to lead.
Do you feel like that in heritage and arts and in the retail, the businesses that are being patronized by these visitors, there just needs to be better messaging that, hey, we've got good stuff for you to come and spend your money on. You're just not doing it. Why would there be more people come but not spending? Is it the economy in general?
Yeah.
Okay, so how is that going to be impacted by more advertising dollars?
So that is also in here, and we kind of went into a great bit of detail as far as like demographic and psychographic information and how we are cross-referencing that with our omni-channel approach, which just means we are hitting people from a bunch of different ways with their feelings. Right now, nationwide, spending is down. Here, it's about flat, which if you are not in Fredericksburg and you're looking at Fredericksburg, you're like, oh my gosh, they're doing really good. What are they doing? I know here, you know, when we're out in the community, it may not feel like we're doing as great as we typically do, but we are doing really, really well based on national trends and national averages right now. Our campaign is performing well above national averages, and our spending is doing much better as well. So it's everywhere. It's all over the nation. I know it's sometimes really hard when we live here in this magical bubble, but it's really everywhere.
Anything else? Okay.
I'm sorry. I got more questions. I'm not seeing the breakdown of costs, though. I see this is a cute visual, but I'm not seeing dollar spend. Is that what this is on this last column?
So we can add that. I think it may have just been cut off because it's so huge when we print it out. The colorful one is the paid advertising. So those are paid insertions, you know, Garden and Gun. Some are digital, some are activation, some are out of home, and it should be color coded on there for you. The second page that is less colorful is actually just editorial earned over the last month, which would have been November, I believe, for that one. But it's also broken down. And one thing to keep in mind with editorial coverage is that creates an ad value equivalency. So if we were to go out and purchase that editorial piece as an ad, it would cost so much more. I'm talking millions and millions. And that breakdown is also in this deck. And we can send that over so you can have that to cross-reference if you don't already have it.
$57 in return for $1 is very impressive to me. Is that in your business, that big stuff?
Yes.
It's as impressive as it seems?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, all right, good. Anything else, Council? David, Jenny, Matthew, Jesse, Amanda, Karen, thank you for being here today. And KK, thank you for letting me grill you. I had some questions, and you helped me a lot. Thank you. And I will go through your material. All right. Item 6B is consider approving a request for funding for the 2026 Food and Wine Festival. This has been tabled from 1/12/16, so I need a motion to get it off the table. May I have a motion?
How do you say it? I move to get it off the table.
These are these procedures we have to follow. Motion second to get it off the table and deal with it today. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, Jim. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
A couple things before we dive into my business and ad. First, I'd like to acknowledge the Andrea and her team for the New Year's Eve ball drop. Another great event for the city, and the number of families out there was amazing. I'd also like to acknowledge the three vice presidents of the CDB and also the executive committee, the work that they've done since with the transition from Brady over that. From my perspective, it's been impressive to me how they wanted to get back into the community and work with the decision makers in the community. That being said, let me move into my presentation. First thing I have is an apology, and that is I have a rule that whenever I'm making a presentation to a decision-making group, that I give them enough information that they can make an informed decision, whether it's yes or no. So I felt that I did not make a proper presentation a month ago about our request for the additional money. So I apologize to you that I took that time up. And also, but I would like to say thank you for the chance to present again for this. So let's get into it. I'm not going to talk too much about the first three slides. I think that's repetitive information. And if you're like me, I like to get to the numbers. So the first set of numbers has to do with Culinary Week expenses. So this is in response to the request, what is the difference between $185,000 and $250,000, adding in the Culinary Week expenses and starting a national publicity campaign to what I would call build a national brand for the Food and Wine Festival. So on the Culinary Week expenses, you'll see a total of $34,000 there. The largest chunk is $10,000 for CBS Austin, and that's based on their fees that we get charged for the Food and Wine Festival and the Christmas Parade. CBS Austin has verbally agreed to work with us for the Restaurant Week, but we haven't worked out the details or the numbers. Using an outside PR firm for 4 months, digital advertising, social media. And the distinction between the influencers and the journalists, the influencers are folks that work in the social media world, the journalists who work in the print media and also in the digital media. Print ads, printing, photography, graphic design. So that's how I got to the total of the $34,000. Is there any questions on those numbers?
Yes, Jim. What do you get for $10,000 from CBS Austin?
So what will happen with the $10,000, there'll be four restaurants that will have a long-form video. So they will come into the restaurants, they'll interview the owners and the chefs. And then what they'll do with their, it's We Are Austin show, that shows at 9 a.m. Monday through Friday. So then there will be a live interview of me the week before that we have the restaurant week. And then leading into the restaurant week, like what we do for Christmas Parade and also for the Food and Wine Festival, they're running those long-form videos the week before the restaurant week on that. They also then, they put us into their website. They also take those long forms and they break them down into 15 and 30-second commercials, and they're running on their website 2 weeks leading into the restaurant week. And they also, what they do is they have a sister station in San Antonio, and they take all of that and they reformat it for the station in San Antonio.
The PR firm, $1,000, who is that? What's the name of the firm, or where are they from? Or?
It's the same firm in Austin that we use for the Food and Wine Festival.
So it's a firm out of town.
That's correct.
What are influencers for lodging?
Pardon?
Influencers, lodging, what is that?
So there are certain influencers that are able to attract people through their social media channels, and the top ones do require some lodging on occasion. So we would bring them in from out of town, and we would provide lodging. And the same for the journals.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thanks, Jim. Is there another slide?
Yes.
Okay. More money? I'm at 219. I'm just wondering.
So increased PR expenses. So there would be $21,000. It'd be $3,000 a month for May to November. This PR firm has not been identified yet. I've started to reach out to national firms to understand what they can provide to us. This would have more travel expenses for 3 to 4 national journalists to come in. So we'd be targeting national food and culinary publications, wine aficionado, et cetera, putting together presentation decks for pitching journals. So that comes to a total of $31,000. The biggest chunk is the PR firm. That being said, what I think is important from perspective of building this brand of the Food and Wine Festival, and there is overlap with the CVB, and so I want to understand more about what that overlap is and what coordination we can do with the CVB. I've reached out to the CVB. We've had a preliminary email about it, and they use a firm called Geiger, which is based out of, I believe it's out of Florida, and I've worked with them in 2 previous destinations, and they're an excellent PR firm. So I would like to explore what's the possibilities of working with Geiger and the CBB to promote the Food and Wine Festival to see if we can leverage them to help us build a national brand. The other challenge we have with building that national brand quickly is getting national sponsors. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to find a national PR firm, the ones that specialize in these festivals and can find those sponsors. So that's one avenue, but that's the most expensive avenue, but it's the fastest avenue to build that brand. So it could be more effective, or maybe it's less effective, but better in the long term to work with the CVB. I'd like to explore all those options before we make a decision.
So you're willing to withhold this request?
Yes, that would be the request.
Is this what y'all do? Yeah. Okay. And would you say that Geiger is a good candidate for this? Okay, at least what you know now.
Let me ask you, if you're going to this PR firm, why would you want to continue using the other one where we're spending out of Austin? Why would you double that?
So the Austin group is very focused on Texas and local journalists and influencers. So it would be our first, getting that launched locally would be more important than nationally.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay, Jim, here are my questions, or my, I'd like to direct the conversation a little bit. We've had a conversation about the listing of benefactors, which I've expressed my opinions about. So with regard to what you're asking the city to do, obviously, is that you and we asked, or we entered an arrangement with the chamber to run this event for 5 years?
Correct.
Yeah. And this is the third. This year's the third, right?
Correct.
Okay. Lose track of time. Okay. Personally, I like the concept of going in a bigger way with national because of the what's happened in Fredericksburg with the wine and the culinary. And certainly, we're in the early stages of the culinary part, I think, aren't we?
Yes.
But I like the concept a lot. I think it will help the community in the long term. The wineries are here to stay, and that business has done really good for us, even with its challenges. My issue is this. I don't know enough about your business to know who gets what, how this happens, and what PR firm gets this, and what it costs to do this, that, and the other. I know some, but I'm not going to deep dive into that. My main concern is what, since you're asking us to invest public money in a bigger, in an expansion of this particular event, which has done really well the last couple of years, what is the public benefit of the result? I'm asking, where do we benefit beyond bringing people to town and the business and so forth? But since it is an investment of public money to an event, the other events, specifically Oktoberfest, since spends some of their money, or they return some of the money through Market Square redevelopment, correct? That's supported by the Oktoberfest, PCAA. Do I have that correct? Okay. And I don't know what it is per year, but it's a routine. What would the Frederick Food and Wine Fest be able to do to benefit the long-term benefit of the city and its constituents and residents beyond just a few dollars here? I told you that I think that's too few dollars for some of these things. And we won't have flood disaster relief going forward, I suppose. So can you talk to me a little bit about that? What's the vision for how it could benefit the city? Beyond the city, I'm talking about the city, with our concerns, Market Square redevelopment, whatever.
Well, the food and wine, the food and wine festival. Couple of things that have surprised me about the food and wine festival over the past 2 years. One of them is that I'm surprised at the demographic that we've attracted so quickly. So in the past I remember correctly, in 2025, it was 28% of our attendees had household incomes over $200,000. So I'm not sure what the other festivals are pulling, but we're pulling a very high-end demographic into the city and the county, and we have the wineries out on 290 that are looking for that high-net-worth individual coming in as well. The same thing for our retailers on Main Street. And we also have, don't want to lose sight of the heritage of Fredericksburg and all of that. So there's an important piece of that. But you take that and you take the Oktoberfest, what it has done and the people that it attracts and the numbers, we need all of that to continue growing the tourism into Fredericksburg. So we're a new piece of that, even though the wine festival has been around a long time, but we're bringing a different demographic in that creates a diversity traveler into Fredericksburg. The other thing I would say is, if you take a look at the publicity that Oktoberfest pulled in this year with its rating with USA Today, and if you take a look at the press that we received for Fredericksburg for Christmas this year, the number of articles that came out that talked about we're a Christmas town, and then this past week there was an article about the small culinary towns across the country, and we made the top 10, and they recognized a couple of the local restaurants, and you take a look at the chefs that are coming into town now, the new Italian chef gentleman who's coming in on Austin Street. You have a gentleman from England who's relocated and is now living here, and he's looking for a restaurant to purchase. So I think it's a time where we could jump on that bandwagon and use that as a leverage to continue growing the Food and Wine Festival and our reputation nationally for these high net worth individuals, visitors that come into town. They're going to come into town with the two new hotels coming in as well. So I think it's an opportunity for us to take advantage of. So to benefit the city specifically, so those individual travelers coming in, they're going to spend a little bit more in the hotels. They're going to spend more in the restaurants. And we want to get them onto Main Street into a historic district and buying in our stores as well.
So what I'm hearing is that there's a broad general benefit, businesses and brand rep and that sort of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, just to add on that, if I may, it's important to look at the ecology of tourism. What is that for us? And there's pieces of it throughout. And we have to recognize all those pieces of it and make sure we're leveraging all of those pieces to help us grow tourism. Okay.
Did we have any discussion when we asked the chamber to take this over that there would be any specific give back to nonprofits or to a city entity like the Market Square? That's a question. I don't know. Do you remember us having any discussions about that?
Yes, there were several discussions on the discussions leading into it had to do with the historical factor of the Food and Wine Festival and what it did in the past, which was, as I understand it, was put on for the purpose of bringing money back to Marketbox and help it to redevelop and bring it to what it is today. So that was part of the intention of the Food and Wine Festival from the beginning. our five-year agreement does call for us to give back to the community for nonprofits and all of that. It doesn't specifically say any nonprofits, but it does specify that we do have to give money back to the community.
Okay. So in your five-year plan, you're looking to maximize that part of our agreement in the future years as you build it up. I mean, where are you in that giving back?
So we did not anticipate giving back much money until our fourth and fifth years.
Okay. That was that. I didn't remember that part of the discussion, so I was just trying to get some clarity on that.
No, he's right about that. We didn't. My concerns about this and increasing the is, number one, you don't accept or you don't take volunteers from the community. I know the previous group that was October with the Food and Wine Fest, none of those people have been asked to volunteer or help. And your comment last time was that you're supposed to have some technical information about food or wineries. And you know, volunteers can do all kinds of things. They don't necessarily have to be the ones to answer about wine culinary events. So you've decided to pay most of these people. In fact, is it not reported that the chamber is actually taking some funds for putting this event on? I was told in the numbers or the salaries or the and so I'm not so sure the chamber, the city ran this for years and never had those people were volunteers and they never took money for the event. Of course, the money was supposed to go toward the square. So they were volunteering to do that. So I've got real concerns that y'all are not using volunteers. You're paying people to put this event on.
Well, to answer your first question, we had nearly 100 volunteers during the week of the Food and Wine Festival supporting us over those five events.
So you do have volunteers?
Yes, we do.
I'm curious to see how many.
We have over, it was over 100 the day of the grand tasting.
I'm surprised with that. Like I say, I know that they basically, and I understand, I was one of the proponents on this thing, the change and get it improved and increase income. But what I'm now seeing is that we're wanting to spend a whole lot of money, build it, and they will come. And I've got real concerns about the community putting so much money in this event. And basically, you can sit there and tell us it's for locals, but it's not for locals. There's $100 a ticket for locals. There's going to be some of those, and I agree on that. But it's not, and I'm not saying we need to do like Oktoberfest years ago did, $10 to get in or something, because you're not really representing the people that can spend the money. So
what would you recommend, Tony? You're asking him to consider a bigger volunteer push for the day event?
Well, if they've got 100, I'm not so sure.
Well, he's talking about the dinner. Are you talking about the volunteers for the outside dinner, for the street dinner, and so forth?
No, the volunteers on Saturday at the Grand Tasting.
Okay.
Is where
okay.
Are they what?
We have close to 100 volunteers on the Saturday at the Grand Tasting.
Saturday, because I was there on the first year on the Friday night, and there were two of us that were volunteers. Everybody else was being paid. So, and like I say, I wasn't there Saturday.
Well, the folks that were being paid were the servers who were serving.
Well, and that's understandable. That's part of the. Yeah. So, I've just got concerns about increasing this thing. We've gotten some pushback. I've gotten some pushback from the commissioner's court. So there's some concerns.
The county that has not provided did not provide FOD funds this past year.
Well, but they have public opinion.
That's true.
Did you state your issues? Okay. I know that there's some concern that's just going to happen with so many good things that happened in the community years ago that were considered community events, and it benefited everybody, and there were a lot of volunteers, and it was one of those things we're all pitching in to help town. But I know in my business, volunteers are very, very hard. Because there's a generational gap with volunteers. There's having to work, make a living here. They can't devote the time that they used to. So I know that that's one of the things that's different about our new generation, generational life and credit.
One thing on the volunteer front, I volunteered the first year y'all took it over and was at the Water Buffalo tent, and it was a wonderful time, and it was a community building thing. There were a lot of us that were locals that were volunteering and people from out of town that made the trip. That was fun to see. This past year, I took a picture of a group, and a lot of them were from out of state that they would come to volunteer every year. So there's still some of that there. I think, as with anything, maybe we have to look for it. Sometimes you have to look harder. I think it's quite glaringly obvious to everyone that there's a lot of overlap between your presentation and what we heard from CVB. And I'm curious to know what CVB has done to help promote the Food and Wine Fest. I know on this sheet, I think you said this is just from November. There's like one article y'all paid like $100 for promoting it. I'm just curious, how is that? Because we need to all be working together in the same direction. So are there ways that they can help support you?
Yes. So I want to be accurate in my statement here. So in the first year of the Food and Wine Festival, we went to the CVB and we worked with them, and through them and Geiger, they brought out 6 national journals, and the Food and Wine Festival comped those tickets for the street dinner. So we collaborated on having the CVB work with us on bringing national journalists in to support the destination, but also the Food and Wine Festival. And there was very good publicity afterwards with that. As we moved into 25, as the City Council and the CVB were working on the budget and what was going to happen with the budget, we were told that the CVB did not have money or was choosing to use that money elsewhere. And so that's why we didn't have any journalists through the CVB for 2025.
Thank you.
I wanted, because this is going to be your third year, correct?
Correct.
So going back, I want to know more about giving back to Market Square redevelopment versus giving to nonprofits.
So I have joined the Mark Potts Redevelopment Commission so that I can understand what the needs are for Mark Potts and what that area needs. In my opinion, the Mark Potts needs an improved catering kitchen. And if that was going to happen, we would provide funds for that. So for us to, and it's the same thing with the Oktoberfest, all of the festivals that have food, that's one of our biggest challenges, is that small little kitchen that we have there. And also it leads to issues with public health and how we handle those issues with hand washing stations, et cetera. So from our perspective, if there's a way to improve the infrastructure of Mark Potts to support food and culinary events at Mark Potts, we would support that.
What is your specific request today for us to consider?
But the request today is to approve the $185,000, which has been approved the past 2 years, and then the additional for the restaurant week, the additional
$34,000.
The total would be
$219,000.
Let me ask you, do we charge rent for this facility?
Yes.
We do. You do pay rent for the Mark Potts?
Yes.
Okay.
We take Mark Potts from, we pay the rent, I do believe it's from Wednesday leading into the festival. There you might be better. But also we rent the Klein Room for that period of time as well.
If I recall correctly, the agreement states that they don't pay rent for the week of Food and Wine Fest. Now, these other events, they might. But I think it's waived for that week.
Corrected.
So you don't, we're Oktoberfest, we do charge rent.
Yes.
And that the difference was, I think we consider the Food and Wine Fest a city sponsored event. And
that's
Oktoberfest
correct.
Oktoberfest is sponsored by PCA.
Right.
Correct.
We're not getting anything for it.
So are they
that's what I wanted a lot. That's what I want to get better at. I want to get better at information that tells us how we're benefiting.
Since the Klein Room wasn't operational when the contract was signed, are they paying for the Klein Room or not?
I'm looking back, Andrea.
What's the question?
So I believe all the fees are waived for this event.
Okay.
As part of the agreement.
I see. So there was some consideration that you might want to wait. You might want to wait and get the other hot money, or do you want to do this thing? Consider the request.
I remember from the last conversation we had to do this separate for some reason.
Yeah. It is considered separately, but if y'all want to wait, you can decide at whatever time you choose.
Anybody got an idea of what you want to put out there? I'd rather get it over. I'm sure Jim would.
I'm okay doing it with it. With a specific.
I'd like to make a motion to approve, though, Brian.
You want?
I'd like to make a motion to approve this.
Okay, I have a motion to approve. Is it 219?
219.
Okay. I have a motion to approve 219.
Second.
All right. Any questions about the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye. Nay.
Okay, so 3-1, Mr. Klein votes no on the motion. I want to be clear with the CVB and with you today. My questions have to do almost all with this. I think you all do terrific work. I think that people do. I like the Food and Wine Fest. I like where it's gone in terms of its expansion, upgrading. I like that. I like the concept of looking into becoming more national because I think it brings in a good tourist base that would benefit us. As I say, we already have the wineries and we're building a culinary. I think that'd be good for the town in the long term. I don't have any issues about the dollar spending on this, that, and the other with CPP, the $1 million, whatever. I think you do a great job. What I'm missing, I need you to help me understand better. How does Grandma on College Street benefit? That's what I want. I want to know we're investing a lot of money and a lot of people have contributed to making this town what it is today that benefits everybody. So Jesse, with response to your comment about the fourth quarter growing, having to do a lot with upgrading the spending and so forth, I want to say that that's maybe true, probably true. But I've been here a long time, and I've seen a lot of people put a lot of time and effort into building up the holiday season for the last 30 years. And that people are coming because of what is happening now and what has been put in the pipeline years ago to build up so that people enjoy what happens here at Christmas time. So there may be a bump in getting people to come this year, but they're used to coming here, and we got HGTV tells us that we're the best Christmas town in Texas. That was by design years ago. And people put in a lot of effort and money, and the city committed a lot of money for the pyramid and the big tree and all the stuff downtown. And we did that thinking in future years we're going to have a bunch of people come to town and have commerce. And so when we see the thousands of people in the parade, we see people carrying sacks around after Christmas, during Christmas shopping season, the wineries, the restaurants, et cetera. I just want to be clear. I'm glad that you spent more money this quarter, but it's a benefit of what's happened the last 25, 30 years. People have put up with that. So I want to see I want to hear more about here's how we're helping the constituents of this town. Just help me with that. That's all. The nonprofits, I'd love to see more given from the Food and Wine Fest. It doesn't have to be thousands and thousands, but more than that. Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
End of sermon. All right. Item C is accepting the Zoning Board of Adjustment resignation of Taylor Williams. This has to be a specific action that we accept it. Okay. And then we will deal with a replacement appointment in executive session. Mr. Williams has resigned, so let's accept it.
I move to accept the resignation of Taylor Williams from ZBA.
Second. Motion second to accept his resignation and look for a replacement. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye. I'm sorry.
And so we will look to appoint a replacement and discuss the appointment of replacement in executive session. All right. Thank you. 10:05. Let's go to the city manager's report. We have a series of annual department updates.
Okay, Mayor, Council, similar to what we do with Fire, EMS, and PD with their year-end reports, we thought it'd be a good idea and beneficial to the community and the council to do a year-end report summary of a number of different departments. You're going to hear from Development Services today, Public Works, Parks, health department, and finally, finance. So we've moved from a monthly report to a quarterly report. This will be more year-end summary information with a little bit of information about where we're going in 2026 mixed in. So we're going to kick this off with development services again. Feel free to ask questions. There's a lot of statistics here, a lot of data, which I know the mayor loves.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so feel free to stop us and ask questions. We'll kick off with Cliff Cross and Development Services.
He's always Cliff. Picking on me because I'm always fussing at him on the slides with a lot of data on it. But that's just my brain, not that it's not a good thing.
No, I understand. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Quentin. Good morning to everyone and Happy New Year. Can't believe we're here in 2026. But as Quentin had indicated, we're going to provide a yearly update for the various departments. I'm going to start with Development Services. I am going to throw some numbers at you initially, and really these numbers are going to focus on a quarterly update from July through September, because if you recall in the previous presentation, we generally present these to you in quarterly numbers, so we just want to compare what the second quarter is in comparison to the third quarter initially, which comes ironically to the end of the fiscal year at that point. So it's going to be a driver next year when we report an annual update on how we prepare the budget to present to you. So the first thing is the first slide, just for the Development Services Department. Really want to give you an update of some of the activity that we have experienced. And this generally relates to permits issued, various board cases such as P&Z cases, and then in-house reviews that are associated with our DRC committee. So from that time frame of July through September of 25, we processed 16 zoning cases, 14 were approved, 2 were tabled, 1 was carried over. So these cases generally involve your rezoning cases, your land use actions, conditional use permits, which is a very popular application that comes before you. And it would also involve text amendments, which you're going to see later. We're going to be bringing some text amendments to you. So we expect that number will go up at the beginning of 26. 7 Board of Adjustment cases. These are traditionally the actions of the ZBA in reference to appeals of the zoning administrator or the director, variances, things like that. Special exceptions is another item that comes before you in terms of the STRs. We had 2 special exceptions that came before you or before them. We had 3 approved. And 2 denied and 1 tabled. So of those 7 total cases that went to the ZBA, the numbers were 2 special exceptions were approved, 3 variances or appeals were approved, 2 were denied, and 1 was tabled at that point. With the HRB, Historic Review Board, we had 15 cases that came before them. These generally are associated with the certificate of appropriateness that comes before them in terms of permitted work within the historic district. 14 came before them, came before them, 14 were approved, 1 was denied. Ironically, the denied case was a case that came back before them and was approved. It was associated with the new construction. The board was not comfortable with the original presentation, denied it initially, gave the applicant the opportunity to amend it, bring it back, and they approved the new design. So basically all 15 were approved at some point. So there were 37 administrative historic reviews, or 13 commercial permits, and 24 residential. What these are is when we receive the applications, as the historic preservation officer, we have the option, or I have the option, to say it doesn't go to the board, I can approve it administratively, and that's what happened there. So 37 were approved administratively. Total, we had 83 plan reviews. These generally include permits, for permitting in terms of residential permits being pulled, such as single-family homes being built, 30 commercial activities which require some sort of exterior alteration within a district that requires a plan review. So we had 53 residential, 30 commercial, and of those, 1 was a major commercial, which was the Muse. As we know, that's a large project. It's required a significant amount of plan review that will continue as it continues to evolve. In terms of permitting, we issued 9 commercial permits.
throughout that time frame for a total of $288,840 in revenue generated within that three-month time frame. That really entailed four major new construction projects, primarily associated with the Muse, and then we had some activity over by the Discount Tire and so forth, and the new Home 2 Suites, I think, was part of that when it was initially kicked off. We had 53 residential permits issued. A large majority of those are new construction, obviously, with the Sonoma Oaks and Friendship Oaks. We have a lot of activity out there, and we expect a lot more coming in. I think we're averaging something like four new construction permits a week in the department. So we're seeing a lot of new construction activity. That totaled a total of approximately $365,311 in permit fees and revenue generated. Now, just to clarify, that fee also includes impact fees and connection fees and so forth. So the reason I'm bringing that up is one of the ordinance amendments we're going to talk to you about in the future is amending our permit fees to bring them more in line with some of our neighboring communities. So that is going to increase that, but I doubt if that impacts the impact fee portion of that. So we'll primarily focus on the review and the permitting process at that point. We had 587 inspections that were conducted within that time frame. Approximately 220 in July, 179 in August, and 188 in September. There were 25 failed. Generally, those are approved as a follow-up. They just require them to go back and look at something to make sure they're in compliance with the code. So long story short, just a comparison of the second quarter to the third quarter. Between July and September, we generated approximately $675,000 in permit fees and applications as compared to $674,000 in quarter two. So we're running about the same path with it, which isn't a surprise because of the large developments.
Help me put some context on those numbers. I see numbers and dollars and so forth, but what does it mean overall? I mean, we're doing good. We're a growing town. What's the context?
What I'm saying is you have a very active residential construction component going on right now. I've been in communities where residential construction is not as active. What I can say is you're generating a healthy amount of revenue for your fees that are being collected for your permits.
Just to put it into perspective, the development services expenses in the budget are about $1.6 million per year.
We're covering our own cost.
That's what I had a question about. What was the expenses?
Yes,
there's a context that makes sense. Yeah,
we're definitely self-sustaining. I'm not going to come and ask you for more staff. Yeah, but I'll just say,
if you need it, you should.
But no, we are self-sustaining and doing that.
Let me back up on the denials. Were those across the board? Were those B&Bs or short-term rentals, or what were the denials?
The denials, well. Depends. Are you asking if it was for the ZBA or special exceptions? The denial traditionally for ZBA is associated with a special exception, and that's because the applicant could not justify or verify that it met the supplementary conditions of a STR within an R1 district. For example, you have to have 50% of the lots around you that are an active STR, and they couldn't prove that. And the board felt like in the findings of fact they did not meet that requirement. Therefore, they denied the request as presented. In terms of permits and inspections, it could be as simple as you go out and you inspect and a water heater doesn't have a properly installed pressure relief valve. You tell them you got to fix it. You come back 2 days later, it's on there, and then it passes. So it just really depends. Most permits that fail ultimately are approved unless it's something out of the ordinary, but it just requires a reinspection at that point. In terms of the short-term rentals, ironically, in talking about where we are with the short-term rentals, between that July and September in doing our analysis in the MGO, it looks like we are up to 1,008 active STRs in all zones. That's a combination of facility and single family and ADU short-term rentals. We conducted roughly 334 inspections during that time frame. Six of those were transfers. In other words, they transferred ownership from, they sold the property, and a new owner came in and complied with the ordinance to re-register it as a transfer property. 293 STR fees were paid throughout that process, which resulted in roughly $159,000 in generated revenue. 232 we've registered as a non-conforming, and that's not surprising because if you recall, we've identified those that have existed and updated their placard to be consistent with the code and brought in a few more that were active. We just need to make sure they were registered, generate an additional $46,000 in fees. We had 16 additional ownership transfers, and then 11 re-inspections, resulting in $825. So that number resulted in roughly $211,025 in revenue generated, which in comparison to quarter two was $218,000. So we're down a little bit, but still consistent with around $200,000 a quarter that we're generating. Something I do want to will eventually talk to you about, and we're going to talk about in terms of the STRs, as you know, they are re-registered or their annual renew is based on the 1 year anniversary. Something that we have been talking about and discussing with the MGO and my government folks that we think will help clean it up. We're thinking about identifying quarters or quadrants throughout the city that will prorate them initially to put each within those quadrants, those individuals on a quarterly model where they renew it. So in other words, what we plan on doing is a quarter of them will renew in May, a quarter of them will renew in July, a quarter of them will renew. That way we can be consistent, and that'll really help us understand the numbers because we'll know what we got on a quarterly basis. So we're talking about refining that process as we move forward. Plus, I think it'll help the inspectors in terms of they won't be overloaded in October and November and things like that. We're still monitoring and continuing to improve the process with the STRs. One of the things that comes up in the Development Services Department, and it's always asked, what is the status of our subdivisions and our developments? And we've really continued to update you on the various subdivisions that are active throughout the city. And I won't go into too many specifics, but when you look at the subdivisions here as they're broken down, Sonoma Oaks, for example, 52 lots that were approved in Sonoma 1. We have 52 of those lots that are recorded, and quite honestly, all the permits have been issued. I think if you've been out there, they're very active in constructing that. So we expect that'll be a complete build-out in occupancy early in 2026. Harmony Hills, very similar to that. When you look at Friendship Oaks, you've got 350 of the original 421 lots that were approved. If you recall, this is a six-phased development, and we recently approved, I believe it was phase three, as part of a couple months ago. They're recording that, working on the infrastructure, and we expect permits to begin to come in on that in the very near future. I guess what I really would like to focus on is one of the concerns that maybe comes up is the trails at Windcrest. Where are they at? Something I really want to note when we look at this from a development services standpoint, you look at those smaller subdivisions that are developed by smaller developers, and then they piecemeal and sell off each lot individually as compared to a major developer that has a plan and a phased action. Where I'm going with that, the infrastructure is beginning to go in on the trails of Windcrest. Once that's completed, I think you're going to see this about the same speed that you would have seen with Sonoma Oaks. So I always caution to not be too concerned on a large development like that, that an individual permit has not come in here, has not come in there. It's pulled by the developer, they pre-sell and so forth. So we expect that that construction will be very active in 2026 once that's completed. This is a map that we're beginning to work on some various maps in the department in terms of our reporting and updates. We talked to the MGO folks. I've learned that they actually have a great GIS system, which we were encouraged about. So we're going to start to try to line that up and make sure that with occupancy permits and so forth, we can better utilize the MGO as we move forward. But I thought I would just kind of show you those individual subdivisions and where they are in terms of some of the commercial development that's been approved, where we are. One of the things, obviously, we've talked about is over where the Discount Tire is. You've got the construction going on there. There is an expectation there'll be another permit pulled for another commercial development or commercial use. Next to that, you got the Home 2 Suites, which is south of furniture and over there across from Walmart off of Friendship. One thing to note, and it's public knowledge now, so I can let you know, tomorrow night, PNZ will be considering a site plan approval for a new multifamily residential apartment community to the south of that. It's roughly 240 units, very similar to, I think, what the 1846 is. You know, in terms of just following up on some of the numbers that were presented, I think Tim presented them a while back. Occupancy rate of multifamilies are over 90%. So we expect that that could be a development that fills up very quickly as we move forward. You have the Waldorf, which was in the ETJ out there that was talked about. Obviously, we approved the development plan. I know we've got some considerations with that. But I think the key thing I really want to bring out of this in terms of the residential, you will see our growth pattern is to the south and west in terms of residential developments, probably because a lot of larger tracts are available for multiple, for subdivision development out there at that point.
So let me ask you about the development going out there on Friendship next to the other apartments. Aren't we going to run into the same situation with Watershed?
So the purpose of the site plan approval is to obviously ensure that we are meeting the requirements of the city codes and ordinances. The difference with this particular property is it's already within the municipal boundaries and subject to city codes and ordinances. When we present it to the PNZ, we will remind them of the importance of making sure that all runoff does not increase runoff to neighboring properties and mitigate any potential negative impacts. But when we consider the findings of fact, our obligation is to ensure compliance with the city codes and ordinances at that point. So the answer to your question is yes, we will take all action, make sure there is no increased runoff. I don't know if we can hold them to any future codes and ordinances at that point because we're obligated to enforce our current codes and ordinances as we move forward.
I'm just thinking we're going down the same road again.
I understand the concerns. I think that the key is, though, we've set the playbook, and until we do those amendments, we're subject to that playbook.
Okay. Let me ask a question about the Muse, going back to the Muse. Have we looked into the fact that somebody ran into that gas station?
We knew they ran into the gas station. I know that's a TxDOT roundabout area, if I recall, and something that they would want that area. Yeah, they ran into it. They ran into it pretty hard structurally. I don't know how secure that was. It was demolished, and it was eligible for demolition because it was not within a historic district or an identified historic landmark.
You just got to wonder.
What's that?
What's going on there?
That's
who got paid to do that?
Well, yeah, I can't speak for the driver. I'm assuming I enjoyed downtown a little.
So we just wave our hands and said that TxDOT's problem.
No, the applicant, and Mick can confirm this, in the state of Texas, unless it is a locked-in historic landmark or within a historic district, a voluntary request has to come from the property owner of record who did not do that as part of their Muse development. And in their partnership to construct that development, TxDOT had some options to do a roundabout there, but the developer did not feel that it was beneficial to them to identify that as a historic.
We might want to watch that old historic house that's sitting down the road. Make sure the lightning doesn't strike it or something.
Well, it could. I'm just being honest. It could go in same situation, very mm-hmm. honest. We talked about that during the PNZ and HRB.
It seems like a few years ago, HRB looked at that filling station to see if they could designate it historic, and I think the finding was they could not.
Yes, they designated the house that Tony's referencing, right. but not the gas station. And as Cliff mentioned, I think TxDOT's future plans for the intersection would require that it be removed anyways. So TxDOT considered it a traffic hazard. It was just a coincidence that somebody hit it.
Coincident.
Yeah, it was a target for sure, right there in the middle. It was an easy hit based on the curve. But so yeah, we'll continue to monitor the house too on top of it. But I just to clarify, it is not a historic landmark or within the district as well. So where are we going next with the Development Services Department? We're very excited about some of the things we have going on. Obviously, as I'd mentioned, Susanna and I were able to meet with the MGO folks. I found it very educational in better understanding MGO and some of the things that we can do to report and give you access and the community access. We're continuing to build that workflow system, which will provide better accountability and ultimately GIS mapping as we line it up and ultimately work with us and as we move forward with our various codes and ordinances. As you've all had a chance to meet Susanna, we appointed we have a new assistant director. She's come on doing a great job, very knowledgeable in the MGO system, and we're very lucky to have her. We filled the STR specialist position. Shannon came on board. Very excited to have her. I think many of you know her. She's really catching on very quick and doing a great job. Ordinance updates. This is something I know Garrett and all of us have talked to you about. And we talked about, I believe it was on during December 9th, some of the ordinance amendments that were to come back before you. And I would suspect the majority of the various ordinance amendments are going to come to you during February and January. The thing I really want to clarify is some of our ordinance amendments, such as SOB ordinance or sexually oriented business ordinances and things like that. There's a couple things that we have to consider, and this is why the Unified Development Code is going to be so important as we move forward. It's regulated through a couple different sections of your code. One, for example, you have a separate sexually oriented business, and Mick, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that's like Article 20 or something like that in your code and how you regulate it. But then you also have some reference in there that references it to underlying zoning districts that allow for it. I think we need to seriously consider what underlying zoning districts are appropriate for it and all those distance separations, which will mean we have to do an actual amendment to the zoning code, which means we have to go through a public hearing process in front of P&Z. So we're lining those up. But long story short, we'd like to have everything to you by February as a council to approve those. And that's going to include time for resubmittals. We've talked about fee structure, which is an amendment that we're going to bring to you, which really comes under our application fee section of the code. So it doesn't technically have to go to P&Z. So that's one that could be sooner and later. But we're looking at some of our fee structures, our tree preservation, and our zoning ordinance amendments that will include various provisions such as temporary uses, things like that. So long story short, all of those amendments that have been proposed and discussed with you, we hope to have from Development Services to you for some sort of consideration at all levels by February of this year. We're talking about the update of the ICC and the trade codes. What that really comes down to is we're rewriting the building codes, which would technically be another amendment. It's not a zoning code amendment, but we do want to update our ICC codes. Most likely, we're going to be looking to go into the 21 codes. It keeps us within at least one cycle of the currently adopted code. I think that's important. And fire can tell you this, in that the more updated your ICC codes are, the better your ISO rating is with the insurance service organization, which ultimately can result in less insurance premiums for your community because you're enforcing the most recent code. And the big thing, obviously, and we've discussed this, was we posted the RFQ for the Unified Development Code. We have a budget in place, and I am pleasantly surprised and happy to report we had a significant number of responses. 13 responses in professional consulting firms have responded to the project. We plan on breaking them open this week and starting the process of selecting a consultant that will ultimately be presented to you in February, most likely, for approval of a consulting firm to move forward with the RFQ, which then will also address some long-term amendments that we have to present to you as we move forward. So that's really where we are at this point. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
A real quick question on behalf of a resident who talked with me. And since I just wanted to get it in the public here, there was this resident was applying for a permit for a minor alteration to their outdoor and an R1, and they were disturbed that they felt like they were directed to a website or to an organization in Louisiana just to get a permit. There was some conversation about not being able to just get a permit, and it took a little while. I know what the delay and it was about, but what about the getting on? Is that something that people can get lost if they go to the website?
So that goes back to the workflow system and continuing to improve and build it. MGO is a Louisiana-based company. That's the software folks. They should never be sent to them. It should be an in-house answer. Where I'm going with the workflow and the checks and balances, it should be and I'm not saying anybody in the community is a dummy, but it should be permitting 101 for dummies. They should just be able to insert the number. They should be able to insert the scope. If there is some sort of issue, there should be a corrective action that they can follow or staff notify to where we can reach out to them. So those are the types of things where we're building that checklist. Basically, a stop sign built into the system. This person doesn't have a contract or registration. It stopped. They're notified. Staff is notified, so we're on top of it, is the big issue. We understand some of those. And those are, to be honest, I'm not saying the current system. Those are just growing pains that you learn as you go through a community. Sure. But we've become very proactive to stay on top of it.
But the big answer that I want you to, the big question I want you to answer is the city is not outsourcing its permitting to somebody in Louisiana.
We are not outsourcing permitting to someone in Louisiana. Now, I will be clear, we do have a outsourcing consultant. One of the things we have made sure with them is that they are an MGO user and they are a licensed user, just the same as the city, and they have the same accountability to report and respond within a time frame per the changes to the workflow system. So they will be as accountable as what we are in-house at that point.
Thank you. Before we do this, I know y'all been patient. I would like to take a brief recess.
Can I ask one question about ordinance? For some reason or other, you're on the hot seat, so I ask again. We talked about doing an ordinance about presentations coming in.
Goes to PNZ as part of that public hearing. It will be before you in February. That's okay. One of the primary ones we want to do. One of the things, I'll tell you what, and I probably should have mentioned it, when I was talking about the application that was for denial in like the HRB or
right.
The CUPs or the exceptions, ironically, that's something we're going to have to work with our boards on because they're going to have to better understand once. Practice has been we just deny it and then give you the option to come back. We're going to have to make sure do they really want to deny it or do they want to table and get more. That's going to be something on staff that we're going to have to address.
Okay. Sure. Thanks.
I'd like to recess for 7 minutes. Thank you. All right. Mr. Klein? Mr. Klein, are you available? All right, let's go ahead and resume. Chris, nice to hear from you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So I've broken out each Public Works Utility Department into their individual departments, and I'll go through basically some of the bigger projects that we completed within each department, and then I have some graphs showing some trend lines and stuff over the past few years. So starting with the electric department project, we did some rehab on some underground primary in Sandcastle. That's up there in the Coney's neighborhood, kind of north of town off of Milam. We joke that Mr. Keller, which is a longtime employee, retired several years ago, that when he started at the city 30 plus years ago, that was some of the infrastructure they installed. So it definitely served the city well in that area. One of the initiatives, and this goes back years, is to try to get overhead lines off of Main Street. We've continued to work with individual businesses. We've worked with Hondo's and PNC Bank. They're in the 300 block of West Main here recently, and they're now fed from Austin Street. So we will continue to work with those businesses, not only in the 300 block, but in other areas of Main Street as well. It's a slow process. Typically, after we move our electric infrastructure, it takes about 2 to 3 more years for telecom to follow. So just because we did this portion, which now everybody in that 300 block is on that side of the street is fed from the back, it takes several more years for telecom to follow us. So it's a slow process, but hopefully years from now we'll continue.
I was in charge of that bank 30 years ago when last time they worked on it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the focus has been, you know, the golden blocks, I guess, but we'll continue to branch out from those, you know, in either direction, both east and west. We completed an infrastructure survey. This basically inventoried all of our electric infrastructure and put it into our GIS model, so it's digital now. The guys can update that when they redo infrastructure in their field, when they're out in the field during emergency situations, they can look at that real time and not go to paper maps. So that was a big project that was completed this past year. And then 5 new commercial customers were added. So this is infill. Y'all probably heard this before, but our electric service territory was defined in 1975. Our neighboring boundary partner is CTEC. So that boundary is again established, and we don't, as the city continues to grow outside, and the city limits continues to grow, we don't serve those customers unless they're within our service boundary. So just the trend line, looking at electric annual kilowatt hours sold from 2014 to last year, 2025. So you can see a trend line. What you'll see on electric and on our water utilities is it is weather dependent. So I don't know that you can really take away a lot of new customers or so forth, but it is certainly weather dependent. So if we have a cooler, rainy season, we obviously don't sell as much electricity, and the same on the water side. But just wanted to show this trend line over the last 10 years. Going into the sanitation department, so some of the major projects that we completed, construction of cells 12 and 13, that's wrapping up. We're getting close to completing that. It does include a customer metal drop-off, what we're calling a customer convenience center, and then a new grit trap. So the grit trap is where our fats, oils, and greases from restaurants, that's where that is basically brought to. It's mixed with mulch, and then it's put into the landfill. So again, it keeps the town clean. It's one of those services that it's charged for, but it certainly, it keeps it out of, say, our sanitary sewer system and so forth. We replaced all the trash receptacles on Main Street over the past year, and then we applied through ACOG for a $4.8 million grant. We are checking on that. We were told at the end of December we would hear whether we were selected or not. So Evan has followed up with a grant writer, but we have not heard back from him as of yet. As far as the amount of solid waste that was deposited in the landfill, just over almost 37,000 tons. which is about 3,600 tons less than the previous year, 2024.
So, where do you put that to?
Certainly. So, I think two things. The first thing is we did go up on rates. So, again, as we've mentioned to council, we were seeing solid waste coming from outside of Gillespie County because our rates were lower. We increased those rates over the last 2 years, and I think that has kept those drivers from coming outside of the county to our landfill in Gillespie County.
And what's the replace the trash receptacles along Main Street? Didn't we just recently do that?
Last year, yes, sir. So this is a recap of the projects that we completed in 2025. Correct. That was completed. So again, a trend line back to a little further, 2003, I believe it is. So you can see, again, what that looks like over the last 20 years. We had the spike there, 2022, 2023, and then 24 and 25, we've actually seen a little bit of a decline, again, because it's, you know, attributed to the rate changes, keeping that material from other counties coming into Gillespie County.
You're not seeing more waste on the road than they like that, like people dropping off their couches?
No, sir. Okay. Typically, we would see that, you know, at the entry of the landfill or on that 1631 Olive Street. I mean, we see windblown trash, but we're not seeing, like, big stuff. Yes, sir. Put a chart in here in regards to the recycling materials. A little bit hard to read. Again, this is material collected at the recycling center and then the metal drop-off out at the landfill. Cardboard and metal are the two big ones. And we obviously see that with packaging. And cardboard is the money maker, I would say, and metal as well. But everything else isn't really, we don't really make any money. We're not paying to have it hauled off, like plastics and stuff. But cardboard and metal are certainly the items that make the city a little bit of money. But you can see the trend line, again, over the last 8 or 9 years in recyclables.
Chris, we do operate at a loss in our recycling, though, right? Because we're taking in so much from the entire community, the county, to move.
We do. It fluctuates, but it averages 60,000 to 70,000 a year subsidized by the sanitation department. And I would also reiterate, you know, with the transfer station, we do have some big plans on exploring curbside recycling, which if you make it, in my opinion, you make it more convenient for the customer, we will see the tonnage of recyclables increase. The other advantage is if it's being transferred to these big sorting facilities, it's single stream. People don't have to sort it. Right now, as you know, when they drive to the recycling center, it has to be sorted when dropped off. So making it more convenient for our customers will certainly increase these amounts. But then we've got to work with the county and council on what those residents of Gillespie County outside the city limits, if we're offering curbside, what does that look like? So we have some thoughts. We can certainly, once we get to that point, share with the council. Stormwater Vegetation Management Department. So a number of different projects. I would say a lot of these projects from 2025 are kind of routine maintenance type projects. Tree trimming, both electric lines and right-of-ways. So we do trimming for the school, you know, the bus routes and so forth on our city streets, obviously. Mowing of city right-of-ways and drainage ways, detention ponds, drainage channels, erosion and different drainage improvements in various locations, whether alleys or, again, drainage channels throughout town. Removal of brush and dead trees in various portions of town of Bruins Creek. So this is something that we try to focus on, depending on the time of the year. And then out of that department, various funds are used to repair various drainage infrastructure, whether that's curbs that are maybe, you know, water that's in a public street is flowing onto private property and in a bad location, drive approaches, various drainage improvements for park systems and so forth. So it just varies throughout town. $50,000 is allocated for those various drainage improvements. So it's pretty small amount, but it certainly helps out. A street department annual paving project is probably the biggest. Last year, we completed about 9.5 miles of paving. This does include the soccer field parking lot. So that was obviously a fairly large area that was paved as part of last year's annual paving project. New roads that we will accept after their warranty period is complete include about 1.1 miles. This includes Post Oak Road by the new middle school, Sonoma, Friendship Oaks, and then 1010 North Cherry. So after a developer completes those public improvements, there's a two-year warranty period that they essentially fix any deficiencies over that 24-month period before the city accepts it. And then after that 24 months, the city is on our maintenance plan. But about 1.1 miles of new roads as part of development was seen in 2025. The street department also assisted in the construction of a parking lot at Lady Bird, Touch House. If you haven't seen it, it looks really good. They did a really good job working with park staff on dressing that up. Traffic control, street closures for special events, major public works departments. I'll tell the superintendents all the time, I'm really proud of the way they work together. Electric department or stormwater vegetation department needs a road close for a tree trimming project or electric outage or water line repair. The street department assists in those road closures on major highways, particularly TxDOT highways. If you recall, we had a fairly sizable hailstorm last spring. That was a pretty big undertaking for a couple of weeks. The street department removed a lot of that storm debris along with the stormwater vegetation department. Sidewalk projects, always an annual project on our list, but Main Street, some trip hazards, some pavers were repaired, leveled, and then obviously new sidewalks up on North Adams were installed. And then a small piece over by La Quinta at the corner of Friendship and Main Street. And then we had a various street striping refresh project last year at various locations around schools, various intersections, and we'll do that again this year. On the water department, some major projects. I didn't list all of the smaller projects, but some of the major projects are water, wastewater, master plan updates and ongoing. We should finish that in the next 45 to 60 days. Water reclamation facility discharge permit renewal was completed and submitted to TCEQ. We have not heard back on that one just yet. It's going through the permit review process. Holming Lane sanitary sewer lift station project, we completed that early last year. Really, that was just a lift station enhancement, seeing the additional flows from some of the developments in that area. Two-inch main replacement. So there was a fire yesterday on East College Street. We just replaced that water line. And so we really focus on some of the, say, older parts of town that have undersized mains, these two-inch water mains, for not only the customer and flow for domestic use, but also emergency services and fire protection. Putting those fire hydrants at the appropriate locations so that if there is an emergency, they can tie into those. The West Live Oak Water and Sanitary Sewer Extension, again, a part of an annex project that is being completed. We have a small section of sanitary sewer the contractor will finish here in the next 30 days or so. But the majority of that was done in 25. And then the standby power generators at all of our major water and lift station sites was also completed in 25. And then we continue to collect and work on the future water supply study, but we really kicked that off last year as a major project. Water pumpage, again, over the last 10 or so years, again, weather dependent. 21 was probably our last really wet year, at least during the summertime, but you can see kind of what that trend line looks like over the last, again, 10 years. And this is just total water pumpage. Doesn't break it down into categories as to multifamily, commercial, or residential. This is just total water pumpage over the last 10 years. And then the last two slides here,
The water spike, was that growth? Was that?
It is certainly growth related. Yes, sir. It is weather dependent, as I mentioned. Sybil Decker just completed the rainfall numbers. Yesterday we got an email. We were 0.05 of an inch below average. So I'm just going to say we met average rainfall in 2025. And that's measured at Lady Bird.
Glenn, did you want to add something? So regarding this slide, that is the total gallons of water pumped, and it takes into consideration the changes in weather, growth. So all new accounts coming on affect that line and the total amount, and then also our watering restrictions. So it's hard to point at any one of those things and determine exactly how that moves that line up or down. But you can see, even as we've been growing, adding a number of lots each year from 2021, our water consumption has been going down.
You think that's because of education and better
compliance? It has some to do with that. It's weather dependent at the same time. But we've added, on the single family residential side, a lot of new homes since 2021. So we're glad to see that line going down. You would expect, just based on growth, that it would be stay up. Right.
Okay. And then the last two slides here, just the aquifer levels, what we see in the Canal well field and the Old San Antonio Road well field. So you can see we did, I would say, rebound some over the summer based on the rainfalls that we did see. Last 60 or so, 45 to 60 days, has gotten a little drier. So we've kind of planed out that 90 feet, again, this is 90 feet below the ground surface at that particular well site. So, and then in Old San Antonio Road, we've actually seen a little bit more of a rebound. Again, we saw a little bit of growth. We don't see the response to rainfalls quite as quickly in this one. So again, you might be seeing some of that here over the last 30 or so days. We're finally kind of seeing that in that portion of the aquifer, some of the rainfall that we received over the spring. But generally speaking, I would say we're better now than we were this time last year with the rainfall that we received in 2025. And hopefully the trend changes from what we've seen over the last 45 days and we start getting some additional rainfall. And I think there are some models that show that in February, instead of being 80 degrees outside, it will be more of a normal winter. Hopefully that includes some cold front to bring some moisture in. Any questions that you have for Public Works and Utilities? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Andrea, welcome. Parks Department.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Andrea Schmidt, Parks Department. So this morning, I wanted to first go over some of our capital improvement projects that we completed last year in 2025. I wasn't going to go over each one individually. I just wanted to hit some highlights. But if you have a question on the others, please let me know. The first one is the equipment that we were able to purchase with funding that was approved by City Council. So thank you for that. We were able to get a lot of specialized equipment to help us maintain the parks and the ball field. We actually got a compliment from one of the sports associations earlier this year that our ball fields are some of the nicest they've ever played on. So that was nice to hear that, and a lot of kudos go out to the park maintenance staff. The other one, the repairs to the plaster damage at Park Pool, the majority of that was actually covered by warranty, so we didn't have to fund all of that. We had to fund a little bit. So hopefully we'll be in good shape on the pools, at least when it comes to plaster, for the next 2 to 3 years. We also added some shade to the baby pool at Town Pool. That was getting hot every afternoon. We were getting regular complaints from parents. So it was nice to have that covered so the little ones had somewhere to swim in the afternoons. And then the last one I wanted to point out was the annual lease for the Christmas lights at Market Square. They're actually going to be coming down January 26th or they'll start coming down. So we're not going to have those Christmas lights out on the square year-round anymore, which will be nice because every time we had a windstorm and a tree branch broke, we had lights and everything hanging all over the place. So we will no longer have to deal with that. They will go back up sometime around the beginning of November and then come down in January, at least for the next 5 years or 4 years at this point. The next three slides are just some charts that show how our reservations have been trending at our various parks facilities. This one shows the indoor facilities in Market Square. If you'll notice, the line jumps a lot in 2020, from 23 to 24 at Market Square. That was because we changed the way we counted reservations. For example, if we had Crawfish Festival and they rented the entire square, we were just counting that as one reservation, when it was actually multiple facilities over multiple days. If y'all remember, Council, we did away with the entire square reservation fee, so everybody has to reserve everything individually now. So that does show a big jump in 24. I think it was really more level, but we did go up this year. We had almost 500 reservations or slightly above, and Jennifer Krupa handles almost every single one of those reservations, working with all the special events and the organizations at Market Square. You'll notice our other three facilities, all the open pavilions out at Lady Bird, the Totch House, and the Pioneer. Pavilions and the Pioneer were both up. Totch House was just slightly down. So we don't really have a reason for that. Maybe more competition in town, but it was slightly down last year.
What does it cost to rent the Totch House?
The Totch House is $150 a day, Mondays, Thursdays.
It's not bad.
$200 for the weekends. This next one is our pool use, and the top line is park pool, and the bottom line is town pool. We reached capacity, or very near capacity, at both swimming pools a lot during the summer. So we typically, town pool, about 8,000 people for the whole summer is probably about as many as we're ever going to fit in there. And you'll notice we had that peak the year the splash pad opened. I was thinking maybe it would decrease, but we actually brought more people to the splash pad that then in turn started using the town pool. So that was good to get more people. And the numbers have dropped a little bit, but we're still higher than we were before the splash pad opened. And then park pool was up this past year as well. And then the last one is our RV park occupancy. You'll notice we had our peak back during COVID, and right after COVID, we had a lot of people outdoors buying RVs. Since then, we have a lot more competition, and that has slowed down some. So our numbers have dropped. And just to give you a comparison, the total number of days we could, if it was 100% occupied, would be about 32,000. So we're about 39% occupancy this past year. 18,000 would have been a little more than 50%. So we're hoping and looking at different ways to try to increase marketing out there. We council approved additional funds this past year for us to market the RV park, and we're going to try to do that. We have a new recreation superintendent that started earlier this year. She's looking at some neat ideas. And before I open it for questions, I did want to mention that I really appreciate the staff that I work with in the Parks Department. Jennifer Krupa, Trevor Dupuy, and Haley Olden do a lot to make my job easier. I just want to thank them.
My understanding, Wayne's retired again.
Yes, sir. Wayne, the gardener that took care of Market Square, retired earlier this year.
So have you got somebody taking his place?
We did, but he decided he wanted to retire as well. So we have that opening. We're actually going to reach out to Master Gardeners, NIPSAW, Nature Center, to see if they have anybody they can send our way that knows about gardening.
Thank you for mentioning your staff. That's very nice.
Any other questions?
The RVs, I know they're, I don't have one, thank God, that some RV parks require a certain, that they have to look decent and they have to have a picture. Does that, the city require that too?
No, we don't require that. We do require they have a valid inspection sticker, though.
Makes sense.
Registration inspection. Okay.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
Krista, is that you? O'Kelly? Are these in order? They have to be. Okay, I see. Health Division, yeah. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Kelly Olfers with the Health Department. My presentation is going to be pretty brief. But I did want to give some statistical information so that you can kind of have an idea of what we did accomplish in 2025. I kind of want to start with just general permits issued. Everybody associates the health department with the permits that we do issue. And so as far as new fixed facilities, so that could be a new facility or a change of ownership, we have 35 new permits this year. So we're hearing a downward trend, but once I go through all of our stats, you'll kind of see from our perspective, it seems like it's kind of holding steady. As far as the total number of total fixed establishments, so that's your restaurants, grocery stores, convenience stores, caterers, etc., we had a total of 317. That was slightly up from 2024. We had 308 mobile food units. That trend has kind of gone down just slightly. We had 64 in 2025, and in 2024 we had 70. So this next year will be interesting with some of the new legislation that's coming about. So we'll see how that goes. Again, just to remind you that come July 1st, our department will no longer be issuing mobile food unit permits. That will be occupied by the state Department of Social Services. So the other big area that we spend a lot of time on is special events. So temporary health permits, 330 were issued this past year. That includes pretty much, for-profit, non-profit. We did see an increase in special events this year, and I'll go over those in just a second. That trend kind of held steady from 2024. We had 335 temporary health permits for 2024. Routine health inspections, that number has gone up. Y'all may recall that we are now a department of three. Andrea Price, our newest inspector, she will be on staff for 3 years come March. So we were able to increase with 500 inspections this last year. So, I'd like to give a shout out to her and to Rebecca Cathy. They are our boots on the ground as far as, inspecting our routine, doing our routine inspections for our fixed establishments. Childcare, we actually lost one childcare this last year and gained one. So we have a total of 8 childcare facilities that were inspected. Our ISD, environmental health inspections, there are obviously 3. We have Fredericksburg, they have 5 campuses. Harper has the 2 campuses, and then we have the Dots Consolidated campus as well. Each one of those gets an annual environmental health inspection. I do want to point out that this information kind of came to life in the last month or two, just talking about environmental health inspections and, what do other health departments do? Back when I started, these environmental health inspections were required by TEA. They are no longer required by TEA. So most other health departments are not doing these inspections. I still find them to be important and will continue to do so. I've been in discussions with FISD recently in the last month just to kind of throw that out, make sure that they want to continue. I reached out to Kerrville. They don't. The state no longer performs these environmental health inspections. So I do feel like that is a value that our community gets from our department that they're not getting from other health departments. So I just wanted to point that out. Special events. This takes a good part of our time. I know with finance, we're tracking our number of hours that we spend on special events. We inspected over 30 special events this past year. That's a lot. And just in my tenure of going on 26 years, just to see that increase has been phenomenal. Just some of the new, I was trying to think of this morning, what are some of the new special events that have been added on in the last couple of years? The Vet Fest, the Book Fest, the Light Festival, Party in the Park, and there's some events, various events at Grand Central off of Milan. So they have some special events. So we're a busy department, and it's been a good year. I think we've done very well. Professionally speaking, I want to just point out again that all 3 of us are accredited now and have our sanitarians licensed through the state. Most health departments. That's something that they can't always say that 100% of their staff is an accredited sanitarium. Other significant things that we had happen in 2025, we did upgrade our inspection app, and that has resulted in improved field efficiency, which we're very pleased with, and it's also streamlined our reporting. So just want to make sure that you guys know that when our inspectors are out in the field and they're inspecting, it automatically upgrades to our website thanks to IT. So it's fun to work with IT and to, you know, make sure that we are putting as much information out there that we can. And I guess the last thing I just want to mention to you guys is that, you know, I'm sitting here watching all of the different department heads and all the statistics and whatnot, and it's very humbling to sit there and see everything that they do. And for our department, it's almost just the opposite. And by that, I mean we are doing our job when there's not any report of foodborne illness. And that also goes to hit the point of how important it is for us in our special events and how important that is to tourism. So I just wanted to leave y'all with that final note. So happy to answer any questions. Anybody has any?
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you for your great work. Appreciate it.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. It's still morning. Good morning, Mayor and Council. So I really like the way that we did this presentation today because you've learned so much information. And then this financial update is just going to kind of tie everything together that you've already heard. But I did want to first point out that our budget book is complete for 2026. This is the one that we apply for the GFOA award. We did do that again for the 26 budget, and it's currently in review. But I just wanted to let everyone know, you know, where to find it, because some people don't know where it is. It is out on our website under departments, and then finance and budget and taxes. And then you'll come to this page and click there on the operating and capital budget for 2026. And then once you get to the home page, you can click into the table of contents and then dive into anything that you would like to research. And as you all know, we're working on expanding our strategic planning. So that's something that we'll work on tying into this budget book for 2027. So enough about that. Now we'll get into the financial review. We had a very good financial year in 2025. Our revenues came in stronger than budget, 101%. That was mainly due to increased sales tax receipts, interest income, and then as you heard from Cliff's presentation, development services came in very strong in 2025. Our expenses came in under budget at 90%, and that was basically due to some salary savings, which we don't like to have because that means we're understaffed and we're looking for people to hire. But we usually do have salary savings every year, and I anticipate probably having some in 26 as well. But the other savings is mainly due to timing of expenditures. For instance, City Hall, our new City Hall, we have some expenditures that are going to, that we anticipated to fall into 25, but due to timing, they're going to carry over into 2026. And then we had an Stormwater had a project, a $3.2 million project that's been delayed, the North Llano storm sewer. So that's mainly the savings that you're seeing there. And if you have any questions, please just jump in. Okay, so knowing that we had a surplus for 2025, I wanted to talk a little bit about fund balance. We talked about reserves with the CVB today, and they were saying how they had, you know, $4.5 million in reserves. Well, for our general fund, we only have $9 million in reserves. So in comparison, you know, that's quite a perspective there. But I wanted to explain that you want to look at fund balance as being a savings account. So it's money that's accumulated over time due to surpluses or one-time revenues. But that fund balance, your reserve money, is supposed to be covered with emergencies, one-time projects, capital expenditures. And then if you need it, it's not best practice, but if you need it, then you can use it for your cash flow. But normally you would want to have your recurring expenditures covered by your recurring revenues. So recurring expenditures are salaries, utilities, and maintenance and operations. So that graph there, that little little graph there just basically says, you know, as a simple analogy, imagine paying your monthly rent from your savings instead of your paycheck. So we don't want to use our reserves for recurring expenditures because then we would quickly run out of reserves. Any questions so far? Okay, I'm glad Annette is here today. I know she's been waiting on this. So you may remember back in our budget workshops, pretty early on, we had just kind of completed our July review and we were meeting in mid-August at a budget workshop. And I had presented that chart that's there on the left. And it looked pretty ugly. And it was intentional because I wanted to have staff and council, you know, realize the shape that we were in. And if we didn't take a deep dive and look at what was going on with our expenditures, with our revenue not keeping up, that we were going to soon run into some big problems. So then we went back and looked after that meeting. And in 2026, we increased our property taxes. That first graph was showing the no new revenue rate. So by increasing to the voter approval rate, we were able to bring that revenue and expenditure points closer together. And then we also went in and we looked at our expenditures and we took out some projects, mainly parks projects, I think, were removed from the budget. So that helped shorten that span between our revenues and expenditures. So if you look at the chart on the right, you'll see that for 2026, our expenditures are just slightly above our revenues. And this isn't just recurring, this is all revenue and all expenditures for the general fund. So then looking at forecast 27, 28, 29 on the right, you'll see that it looks much better in proportion to the chart on the left. Our expenditures are still higher, but that would also include capital improvements, one-time projects. But at the same time, that's looking at like $3.5 million that would be dipping into our reserves if we stayed on the track of that chart.
Does the revenue line include a fee for a revenue for brush and leaf collection?
Yes. Yes. And that was one of the changes along with updating the property tax numbers. We also added in $530,000 to come closer to our expenditures for 2026. And then also, just to let you know, the forecast for that revenue, you can see it doesn't jump up. It's pretty conservative. It's kind of looking at the last couple of years' trends and sticking with that. But with all the recent talk with the state legislative changes, you know, we could come in lower than what that looks like on our revenue trends because of property tax changes possible. So just looking at key trends from 22 to 26, based off of those charts, and this is, again, the general fund, personnel costs are 60% of our recurring cost. It's our largest growing expenditure. Recurring revenues are growing at a slower rate than our recurring expenditures. Our coverage ratio is declining, signaling marginal compression. So what that means is we still need to be looking for additional recurring revenues to be able to make up the higher rate of growing recurring expenditures. We've looked at lowering our overtime. We're going to be monitoring that this year to try to stop the higher growth of personnel. But we always, you know, we're always going to need additional staff as the city grows. And then we have a step plan in place for our public safety. So that's an automatic 2.5% increase in personnel. So there are things that are in place that we'd have to make drastic changes to if we don't find recurring revenues additional. So key takeaways, action items, our structural balance is at risk by 2029. We need to control our recurring cost. We need to strengthen our recurring revenues. And just a reminder that fund balance is for one-time needs and we should avoid using it for our recurring operations expenses. Okay, so now we're going to talk a little bit about sales tax and hot tax for 2026 so far. Sales tax receipts are looking good. We finished 2025 at $9.6 million, so that was up over 2024. And for 2026, we're at $2.3 million through December. And I expect to hear from Tim back there pretty soon on our next month receipts. We probably will have that in the next week or so. I don't anticipate any major changes from last year's January number or the year before that. So we did budget an increase in our sales tax numbers this year. That was another adjustment we made to try to shorten that span between revenue and expenditures. We raised our sales tax to 9.25. So we raised it 3% over 2025's budget. So sales tax is looking good. And then same with hot tax. We came in right around the same number as 2024. And we're looking strong for October through December of 2025. We're at 28% of our total budget, which is, again, $6 million that we budgeted for 26. And then just to look, this is something we typically look at is our electric and our water revenues and consumptions. Our electric revenues, year-to-date November, at $2.4 million, still early in the year of our 15.9 budget. And we're in the lower consumption months and lower sales, so we'll start to see that go up later in the year. I'm not anticipating any issues with meeting that $15.9 million budget. And then our water and wastewater revenues were at 19.5 of our $10.2 million budget. And then you can see the graphs there for the comparison on the revenues and the consumptions. For the last 3 years. And that's my last chart. So is there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. City Manager Bailey will review the future agenda list.
Okay, Mayor, Council, coming up January 20th, as I mentioned earlier, we will have department updates from Fire EMS, PD, and Municipal Court. Looking forward to that. We will have a follow-up item from the special meeting on the 13th to award hot funding for FY26. We'll have an ordinance regarding community room use and fee at New City Hall. Evaluations of city manager and municipal court judge. We have an ordinance repealing current ordinance for horse-drawn carriages, request for July 4th, Gillespie County Fair, Light the Night parades, as well as street closures on the agenda for that day. Any questions about the 20th? Coming up in February, ordinance amending sound ordinance. We have ordinance amendments to solicitors' permits, animal control fees, and then sometime later, amendment to current SOB ordinance. Coming up under special meetings and events, again, January 13th, special meeting in this room, hot funding applications review by the council that afternoon, 5:30 p.m., coffee with the city manager, January 14th. Do we have a speaker? For that, have we verified yet? Special guest? Okay. I think we're working on one. We'll have the county judge in February. Regular council meeting again on the 20th. We're kicking off our Fredericksburg Citizen University first class with getting to know your local government. I'll be giving a presentation. We invite the entire council to be there if you would like to be part of that presentation. And then February 3rd, first city council meeting officially in the new council chambers in the East Wing. So fingers crossed, but we're looking at our first meeting being that day. Any questions?
Question for Cliff, the RFQ and the amendments you mentioned, would that be in a February meeting as well, 17th?
Or? Yeah, we're shooting for February 17th. One of the things we'll want to look at in the selection process, obviously we've talked about ultimately any final document being recommended as part of the P&Z process. Question becomes, do we take it to the P&Z for a formal recommendation to bring to you, But short answer is yes, we expect February 17th. The RFQ did identify it as TBA or TBD, so if we have to push it back, we do have that option as well.
Any other questions about future items? All right. We have some executive session items to deal with. Consider and discuss an appointment for the ZBA and a couple of other matters. So we'll go into executive session. Thank you. All right, we're back in session. We have one item resulting from our discussion in executive session.
All right, I move that we approve adding Adam Luton to fulfill Taylor Williams' unexpired term on ZBA and appoint Jimmy Colt to the alternate position that Adam left on.
Second. Motion second. Any questions or discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Anything else, Council? Thank you, everyone. We are adjourned.